Good morning, Russell. Nice to have you with us this morning.
Good morning, Father Emil. How are you?
I'm very well indeed, thank you. I thought we had lost you somewhere along the way. But anyway, there we go. Nice to have you with us today. Russell, Father Russell, you always have lots of interesting things to say. So uppermost in our minds are, the heist at the airport, for example. And when I read the newspaper this morning, I thought, my goodness. So cops were tipped off, but nobody answered the phone. It makes me so cross, makes my blood boil when I hear that sort of thing. And then the other issue in the news at the moment is this SASSA debacle. And I'm sure you've got something to say about one or other of these things.
Yeah, I think besides the blood boiling part of the whole thing, this question of how our social sort of morality has declined is to me becoming more and more obvious. You know, we see these big events that are happening. We see the SASSA thing. I mean, and we see quite blatantly yesterday, the Chief Justice saying that a minister is incompetent, for the way that she's handled the situation, and how, there's layers and layers of dishonesty, basically lies about, the situation that the whole social grant system is in.
Mm.
The question as well around that heist at the airport and how information is given out in such a way that you say, well, okay, there's more to this than what meets the eye. We are in a serious time of social moral decline.
Right.
And I'm not sure how one, I've never said this before, but sometimes I sit in these past months and ask myself this question, at what point are we so far gone that you can't pull back?
Yeah.
When it comes to, as what a famous moral theologian at the seminary in Pretoria used to say to us, Father Kevin O'Gorman, he said, when you get onto the slippery slope and you start sliding, how and where do you put the brakes on? And you sort of see this filtering down as well. I'm convinced you see this filtering down, the way that people in their personal lives and in communities do things, because the whole moral atmosphere is one of which, in some ways, there are no absolutes anymore. We just do as we please, when we please, which is going to not only, lead us into the sort of, as far as I can make out, just more and more chaos.
Mm.
But the fact that one of the key tenets of morality is the question of right relationship. I mean, when that breaks down, when right relationship breaks down, it's very hard, I think, to restore it again. It takes almighty effort to do that. So I find it all very worrying, and it sounds a bit depressing, but I think we need to realize the seriousness of the situation when, we see this kind of SASSA thing or the airport heist happening and the sort of narrative around it.
Yes, indeed. And what worries me too is that, if people like you and me can see the whole thing breaking up, why is it that people like the president of the country don't come in and say something should be done about this? I mean, it's as though the corruption goes from one level to the other and everybody just closes an eye, and it's people like ourselves. I mean, what Chief Justice Mokgweng Mokgweng did yesterday, I thought was quite staggering, the way he didn't mince his words.
Yeah, you're right, and there are people in our society who are not mincing their words.
Mm.
Dare I say it, it's unfortunate that most religious authorities are mute on a number of these subjects. Certainly in the social upheavals that one reads about in ancient Israel, and you look at some of those great prophets, you read from one today, Jeremiah, and how they had the utter conviction that they had to speak about social morality and spoke about it very, very powerfully and very strong language.
Mm.
We are not hearing what we should be hearing, my assessment,
right,
from our religious authorities. But
right,
there are people like Judge Mokgweng Mokgweng. There are a couple of others. I mean, I think another person who, who's got a very strong voice and certainly understands the deprived situation that we're in, are people from Section 27 like Mark Haywood that are speaking out, fearlessly about these things which are wrong. And We have a failed leadership. We don't have a leadership that's failing. We have a failed leadership. Mm. I mean, it's quite clear that, you know, the current leadership of this country has failed in the task that was given to them. And that failure of theirs in leadership is now beginning to filter right down onto the ground, where you have a situation where 17 million people may not be able to survive, most of those being the most vulnerable in our society because of a failure of leadership and a couldn't care self-absorbed attitude.
Right, yes, yes. No, it's very, very sad. And not only sad, it's what's the word I'm looking for? You know, people are just going to be deprived. 17 million. I mean, it's like a massive starvation that's going to happen.
Yeah, and you know, the trial that I managed to of the presentation in court yesterday that I managed to watch. I mean, it's quite clear that this is not going to be a situation that changes simply if the court rules that, you know, you need to enter into a new contract or extend the contract. I mean, that contract is, so to speak, the symptom of a much deeper problem. And until we acknowledge that there's a much deeper problem, which may be, you know, self-absorption, greed, corruption, whatever you want to call it, until we acknowledge that fundamentally we've got a much deeper human problem, I can't see things changing. I mean, it's going to be a Band-Aid again, you know. I mean, that's what we keep doing. We're putting Band-Aids on things. Mm. And the whole surface is so full of Band-Aids, we have no idea what's festering underneath.
You know, the sad thing, Russell, is that even though the Constitutional Court makes a decision about something, people are not adhering to that decision of the Constitutional Court. And we say to ourselves, well, what on earth is the good of the Constitutional Court if they speak with conviction about things and our leaders pay no attention to it?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the Constitutional Court ruled over a year ago that the president was in violation of the Constitution.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't really seem to take that too seriously. You know, he was told to pay back some money, but, you know, the money is one thing. I mean, the attitude that came across is to say, well, you know, I did nothing wrong. You know, this is a plot against me, blah, blah, blah. We've heard this whole narrative before, is indicative of exactly that, you know, the deeper problem. I mean, I was just reading this morning very early. You know, I was awake this morning just after half past four. I was reading, you know, how, as well, in the whole Marikana thing, suddenly the police have just absolved 87 police people from what happened. I mean, the Marikana issue has never been resolved. I mean, people were shot down. People were shot, just indiscriminately shot, by the very people who should have been protecting them.
Yeah.
And there seems to be absolutely no sense of responsibility that's taken for any of these things.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the person who was responsible for e-tolls, and we know the big debacle of e-tolls in Gauteng.
Mm-hmm.
We know, for example, that the system is not effective, not efficient. We know that there was corruption in the deal.
Mm-hmm.
And now, we just heard recently, been put in charge of a PRASA, is that the whole the commuter rail thing, you know, has been brought. I mean, there's serious, serious clouds hanging over this person's head.
Mm-hmm.
We can go on and on and on. We can talk about, you know, Brian Molefe, who was recently sworn into Parliament.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he resigned from Eskom, and there was a serious cloud over his head.
Yeah.
What do? We shift him up higher.
Yes.
You know, we put him in a position of influence and of power. And that's not the end of that story either. You know? We have moved into an area of moral bankruptcy.
Right.
The gospel that we hear today about, you know, Lazarus, you know, sitting outside the rich man thing. And we think that that's the physical thing about food and water and giving him material possessions. And I'm wondering if the Lazaruses, you know, are not those who have been, you know, marginalized intellectually, marginalized morally, marginalized, you know, through education. I mean, you can apply that gospel very clearly to, and there's a harsh judgment that follows afterwards that Jesus, you know, for this kind of sense of, you know, bankruptcy.
Right, yes. Well, we can go on and on. Lots of things to say about this debacle, but thank you very much for those comments, Russell. Can we move on to something else? Pope Francis has just celebrated his fourth anniversary. He's the anniversary of his election 4 years ago, and this has given rise to a lot of discussion, praise, criticism, and so on around the world. And we thought you might have something to share on that.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I was writing on this the other day and I was thinking about it. And, you know, it's quite clear to me that, first of all, to understand Francis, we have to understand the Latin American church, you know, where it was about, you know, justice, about engagement, about, you know, the welfare of the poor, you know. And I think I use as an example, you know, the kind of icon of the Latin American church is Archbishop Oscar Romero. And he stands for social justice and against poverty and assassination and torture and all those different things that were happening in the 70s when he was archbishop, because he himself was gunned down. And so, you know, there's been definitely in the last 4 years a seismic shift in the church. I mean, if you think about the kind of conversations we were having in the public spaces before Francis, you know, was mostly dominated, not only, but was mostly dominated by, you know, the usual things, you know, abortion, contraception, you know, gay marriage, et cetera, et cetera. The narrative now is very different. When you think about how Francis has opened up spaces for there to be conversations, but also highlighted things like poverty, migration, refugees, an economy that heals, as he puts it, talking about the world economic system, and, of course, his big thing about the protection of the environment. He has changed the conversation in the Catholic Church. He's changed the direction, so to speak, in which the Church seems to be moving. Mm-hmm. Now, that said, it's not without difficulties, of course. I mean, we know that there's been a bit of resistance to him. But he, you know, there are areas, I think, where we can critique him. I mean, I think that, you know, a number of things, the whole question of, for example, him talking often about religious authorities and the way he's told, you know, clergy and bishops, you know, that the way they're behaving is no good and, you know, that we're here to serve and all that stuff he's saying is good. But it seems to me fundamentally there's another problem, and the problem is formation. If we don't realize by now that the way we train priests needs to be completely overhauled or reformed, then I don't know. It seems to me that's one of the key areas that is going to change some of the symptomatic stuff that he talks about. Mm. If one looks, for example, even at the Vatican Bank, I mean, he had to clean up that you know, mess, financial mess that the Vatican was in. And although he's done some things to move towards that, we still haven't seen a budget from the Holy See. They still haven't had an audit by an outside auditing firm. There's been all sorts of things put in to block that kind of thing happening. I think that's you know, an area where you know, he hasn't quite got it right. I think as well, if one looks, for example, at the whole question of the abuse of minors, we had this big thing last week where one of the lay people from that commission resigned. There was strong word to suggest that she resigned because the Pope was blocking things. She's come out very strongly this week. She just published a letter. I don't know if you've seen that. The letter saying basically it's going to the Pope, it's the Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith, and Cardinal Müller, who is in charge of that congregation, that have been obstacles to the work being done. I think the Pope has to deal with those situations. He very much has this attitude of leaving people to get on with it when he's given them tasks, but he's got to also somehow make his staff in the Vatican accountable. The last thing I'd point out is, you know, the whole question of the role of women in the church. The Pope has over and over said he wants women to be more involved, to be in positions of leadership. You know, he set up that commission to study women deacons. He said that women will never be priests because he doesn't want to clericalize women. But he hasn't really put any woman into you know, big jobs in the Vatican. Mm-hmm. I pointed out, you know, the other day in a piece that I wrote that he changed the press officer recently from Father Lombardi to Greg Burke, who's a layperson. Why, for example, that was a job, it seems to me, that could have been given to a woman, a high-profile job in the Vatican. So I think there's a lot of areas where, you know, in our assessment, he's not always getting it right. On the other hand, if one looks on the global scale, the way that political leadership is looking to him, the kind of reestablishment of relations between Cuba and the U.S., which the Vatican and the Pope were very much behind, of his highlighting of the plight of refugees and migrants, what he's doing in terms of dialogue with China. I mean, all those things show us that the church is moving in a new direction.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely. I think it's moving in a hopeful direction. But I sometimes get rather upset when I read the comments made by some of our very traditional Catholics, particularly in the United States, when you follow this on some of the Catholic media, the sort of things they say are so un-Christian, un-Catholic, disloyal, and so on. And I think there could be a lot more sensitivity about how some of our people speak about someone like the Pope.
Yeah, you know, I mean, change always brings reactionary forces into play, and I think that, you know, some of those so-called traditionalists. You see, I have a problem with that word traditionalist, because I think the traditional, you know, truly, in the best sense of the word, traditional Catholics are people who are going to say, well, you know, this is the Pope that God has given to the church, and so this is the Pope that is giving us direction. I think that's how a truly traditional Catholic would react. I mean, I think these are really kind of right-wing ideological people who are you know, attacking him. As you said, he's very little Christian. I just read a horrible column in The Spectator last week by, you know, Damian Thompson, for example. He really is. And I think his assessment is wrong. I mean, I think his information is completely wrong. I think he's drawing completely the wrong conclusions in the things that he's saying, but really hammering the Pope and basically saying that, you know, this is a failed papacy and this Pope should resign. I mean, I don't think that's the case at all. Mm. I tell a story, you know, Father Emil, in a piece I put together the other day, of how, yeah, in South Africa, a group of people from different religious backgrounds were sitting down and talking about leadership, the thing we were talking about a few minutes ago, and saying that there's absolutely no leadership in this country, you know, that it's morally bankrupt. And then someone was saying, well, it's not just this country, look at the world, look what's happening in the U.S. And there was a real sense of heaviness, and people were pretty grim. And a Muslim man, a Muslim participant, said, ahead of any of the Catholics sitting there or other Christians, he said, why are you complaining? There is one leader we can all look up to, our Father Francis. And so, you know, we see how, in that little moment, in that comment, how people outside are seeing this Pope and the moral power that he does have, the moral authority that he does have. I think, you know, I would hold that, you know, those people who are bashing the Pope are probably much louder. They've got a megaphone in terms of social media and blogs and things. But if one looks at all the mainstream traditionalist people, my sense is people are behind this Pope. They find him challenging, and they believe that he is doing the right thing.
Right, yes. Father Russell, thank you very much for those comments. We've gone over time. Quick update about what's happening at the Jesuit Institute.
The next week, Thursday, we're holding a round table discussion with some people from the Legal Resources Center, and this will be to discuss how we can help people who are vulnerable access the justice system, because we're finding more and more that for people who don't have resources, it's very difficult to access the justice system. And so next Thursday will be this roundtable discussion about that, and I hope that we'll get some stuff out of that we'll be able to talk to, because it looks like a very good sort of agenda, and there'll be people there from many different sectors of society, from the religious sector, from the NGO sector, et cetera, et cetera. Happening next Thursday. But I think the big thing for us that we're really preparing for at the moment is what we call the Triduum Retreat. So we offer a retreat which takes place at the Carmelite, next door to the Carmelite Center in Benoni at LUMCO, the Bishop's Conference Pastoral Center. We start on Holy Thursday in the evening, and we finish on Easter Sunday morning. But for those days, we say to people, if you really want to be able to deeply, spiritually celebrate these most important holy days of the year, come away on a retreat where we have the liturgies with the Carmelite sisters, but we also gather together for a few prayers and inputs. Get away from the commercial side of it and worrying about Easter eggs, and come and really experience what the Triduum is about. So that's taking place, of course, over Holy Thursday, Good Friday, and Easter Saturday. Holy Saturday.
Yes. Okay, Russell. Thank you very much indeed. Lovely talking to you again, and have a lovely day. We'll speak again next week.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. That was Father Russell Pollitt of the Jesuit Institute.